a podcast for dads who love music, made by dads who love music.
Hello and welcome to Dad Rocks, the podcast about being a dad and loving music and how the two intersect in our lives. I'm your host Josh, and today my guest is Jeff Beck. No, not that Jeff Beck. He's been dead a few years now. Plus, not sure he even had any kids. And if I had that Jeff Beck, it would be a massive deal, and I probably would have told you guys all about it in the first place. Anyway, this Jeff Beck is the owner of Eastside Mags, a comic book store in Montclair, New Jersey. Jeff was also part of the North Jersey punk scene in the late 90s and early 2000s, and is an avid music lover, mainly of punk and hardcore and all that kind of stuff. But most importantly, he's the father of two young boys. Jeff, welcome to Dad Rocks.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going great. How have you been? How's the store been going?
Store's good. Yeah, busy, sometimes a little quieter, but overall the warm weather's coming. So, we expect it to foot traffic to tick up. And I'm hoping for a busy summer. It's our 10th anniversary this year. So
wow.
Big deal.
And you guys just moved locations too about like a year or two ago, right? Was it in the middle of COVID or?
About 2.5 years ago, yeah. So right after COVID shut down, October of 2021, we moved spaces kind of diagonally across the intersection from where we used to be.
Right. Because you guys are now officially on Bloomfield Avenue compared to, was it South Fullerton you were on before?
Yeah, we're right across the street from Bear Burger and the Clay Ridge Theater. Nice. That Montclair Film runs. So yeah, it's great. A great location.
Awesome. Now, I do want to say, I think you've been the only owner of that shop, right?
Correct.
Because I believe this hat I bought in your shop. It was supposed to be, I bought it as a birthday present for my brother because I didn't know what to do. When this was like, I guess, in 2014 or 15, and then he gave it back to me as a white elephant present during Hanukkah and stuff like that. So that was for those of you, because we're only audio, this is the official Marty McFly Back to the Future 2 hat that he wore in Back to the Future 2, which was supposed to be in 2015, the multicolored neon hat. So
I definitely have one too.
Definitely not the most comfortable hat, but definitely a cool thing to have. And I've been in your store, several times, and I'm not a comic book guy, but I always appreciate the fact that, there's something like that in the neighborhood, especially in a place like Montclair. How did, the whole store kind of start? And you just said this is your 10th anniversary, so how did you kind of get into it?
The store started... I was working in the city for about 10 or 12 years in hotels and conference centers, selling technology services to companies that would have meetings in the different hotels and conference center spaces I worked in. Mm-hmm. And, I've just always been a fan of comics. I've always been a fan of music. And I liked my job, but I didn't totally love like the owners of the company and some of the initiatives that they had. And it's a lot of mixed feelings. They kind of sold one thing to you when you were in the interview process, and then you kind of find out it's a little different once you're there.
Right.
So after a while, it started to wear on me, and then my immediate supervisor, who's one of my best friends to this day, Nick, they let him go suddenly, and he was kind of the only reason I was still hanging on there, and was like the only thing that was keeping me going. And so once he was gone, I went, well, forget all this. It took a little while to put a business plan together, tried to get some loans, didn't really own anything worth any money that could be used as collateral against the loans. So luckily, the one thing the company did do for me was pay me an exorbitant amount of money that I didn't really spend, because I'm not a fancy Mercedes driving lavish luxury kind of dude. Very simple guy, so a lot of that money just kind of started to pile up, and I went, well, I guess I could just use this money to open my business and we'll see how that goes. And sure enough, I didn't think I'd make it 6 months, but I signed a lease, got a bunch of products, opened up the business, and now officially as of this summer it'll be 10 years. So
and did you always And you're from the Montclair area, right? Are you from Bloomfield originally, or are you from?
I'm actually from Wayne,
okay,
which is about 20 minutes away. But
right.
Yeah. But we spent a lot of time in Montclair growing up. It was always kind of like the cool town to be in, and they always had kind of cool restaurants and cool things to do, and you know, the music thing. Yeah, there used to be Bloomfield Ave Cafe on Bloomfield Ave.
Yeah,
and that was, I practically lived there for I don't know, a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, because I was wondering, like, you know, what drew you to Montclair? Because I know there's a shop in Livingston as well, you know, in the other part of the county. And, you know, Wayne has, you know, a bunch of stores too. But was it the fact that there was such a vibrant downtown that you were like, this is where I need to be?
A little bit of that, yeah. Vibrant downtown and memories of hanging out at Bloomfield Ave Cafe and the Soda Pop Shop when the Soda Pop Shop was in Montclair. And I can't remember the name. I want to call it the Blue Note, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't the name. But there was like a jazz club.
On Walnut. It's Trumpets.
Yeah, that's,
I think it's still Trumpets. There. It's still there. I think.
Is it still there?
From a couple of years ago, because a family friend of mine, actually a former guest at Allstrom, sometimes plays over there. I don't know if it's around, but I know that I would say within the last 5 years, at least before COVID, it was still up and running.
You know, because I drive by that area, I'll go down Walnut, and I always think to myself, like, oh, I wonder if it's still there. And I never look. Like, I never bother to look. Even when I'm walking down Walnut, I never stop to search for it. But, I have a lot of really great memories of hanging out in Montclair as a kid. So that was an option, and Ridgewood was an option. But Ridgewood has Bergen County Blue Laws, and then I wasn't sure how to tackle being able to sell certain things on a Sunday but not other things. Let's just keep it simple. I looked at Jersey City too, but Jersey City rents are even 10 years ago when I was looking, they were super high, so I can't imagine what they are now. But
no, I live in Bergen County, so I understand, and I know taxes in both Ridgewood and Montclair are high too, but you know, compared to Jersey City, they're much more affordable, so get that. And you know, just, you know, I guess there's always a need for like a place like a comic book shop. But, you know, you've been open now since the Marvel Cinematic Universe kind of had kind of exploded. Did that help bring in a lot of foot traffic and a lot of customers? Did that, you think that, you know, opening during that time was definitely helpful for you?
Definitely. Yes, for sure. I think it was a combination of that. I remember when we opened up, it was this summer that they had kind of announced that Guardians of the Galaxy was coming out. And even guys who I was meeting, having had a brand new store, who had been working in comics for 20, 30 years even, we would have conversations and go, yeah, why are they doing this? Why are they making Guardians of the Galaxy? Like, what a random fucking comic book property to choose. Captain America, sure. Iron Man, Thor, all those make 100,000% sense.
Right.
But even people who are deep in the comics industry were going, really? Why would you do Guardians of the Galaxy? That seems like a real gamble. And then the movie came out, I think it was like fall of 2014. Mm-hmm. And by Christmas time, I think about a third of my store was like Baby Groot stuff. I mean, we all know that movie, people went to go see that movie, and that kicked the lid right off of Marvel Studios if it hadn't already been kicked off. And people were just like, this is the Guardians of the Galaxy, Baby Groot. And we had plastic pots with Baby Groot coming out of it. And you press a button, it would play I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. And I bought like 8 cases of those things. It was so many. And they came in a display box, and you put it out, and there was each one had a Try Me sticker on it. And I mean, it was probably one of the top 10 biggest mistakes in merchandising I think I've ever made. Because it was just nonstop hearing 45 seconds of that song, but the same 45 seconds over and over and over again. And then you'd get kids who would come in, who were now adults, which is also kind of funny. And they would just come in and go, and just hit all the buttons. not in sync with each other. I mean, at least if it was timed properly,
right.
You know, when you're a kid and you're in elementary school and they're like, we're going to sing in rounds. And they, this side goes and that side goes and the middle goes. And, you know, it's sectioned off so that it sounds okay. This was like, it was like Michael Jackson, Jackson 5, chaos. And it was horrible. Yeah. It was like, what I would imagine the devil to sound like if I ever met. Just horrible. But eventually we sold through them all eight cases. So it was fine. But nothing like that has been seen until The Mandalorian came out and then Baby Groot. But luckily, Baby Groot didn't talk. So we didn't have to worry about Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Baby Yoda, sorry.
No problem.
Baby Yoda, Grogu. And luckily, none of those toys spoke.
Right.
Because Grogu didn't speak.
Yeah.
So there was nothing to press buttons, but definitely that's the second time I think probably a third of my store has been filled with just one character.
Wow. That's, you know, but again, that helps you. You know, you're selling merchandise. So it's...
Sure, but I still got to sit there for like 8 hours a day listening to people go, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
I want you back.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, but I meant
minutes later. This is cool. I want you back. Come on, guys. Really? Like, we all know what song's going to come out of this.
So, you know, I can only imagine that you have a really nice community of regulars, of people who come into the store, you know, constantly. Is that accurate that you have like your community? How does it feel knowing that you created something like that, that's kind of really special to the area?
Kind of surreal. It doesn't necessarily feel like I've built a community. It just feels like I know a lot of people who come visit me at the shop and then buy stuff at the same time. So by definition, it's a community, but it doesn't feel that way to me personally. It just, at this point, like a lot of people have been coming by for so long, I almost forget that I've only known them about as long as I've had the shop, and it feels like I've known them way longer. So, you know, people come in and it's like, hey, how's it going? But it's not the formal, like, hello and welcome to my retail establishment. Right. Like it is sometimes when I don't recognize the person, but then someone will walk in who I know and I'll be like, hey, how's it going? Right. Or it's like, cheers. Or it's like, you know, someone walks in and immediately we're throwing barbs at them. Like, you can't wear that hat in here. Like, what are you doing? You're too old to wear a hat looking like that. You know, it's like joking around, but you know, I know the people. So, but then when I'm talking to someone like you and you go, oh, you built a community, I stop to think about it and I go, oh, I guess we kind of did, like, or at least we brought people together.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I can credit myself as creating a community, but maybe more of
facilitating it,
provided a focal point for everybody who already existed in town, to kind of come together and enjoy comic books and pop culture and complain about like Ant-Man and Wasp or, you know, talk about how great X-Men 97 is, or, oh, when's DC going to make a good movie, or what's James Gunn going to do with the DC stuff? So it's just, you know, providing a place where all those folks who already previously existed can kind of come together and we can talk about that stuff.
Does it feel like kind of like, you know, just to give a parallel to some movies, and granted it's more music movies, but like a High Fidelity or an Empire Records type situation where...
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, 100%. I mean, I try to think of myself as a less douchey John Cusack from High Fidelity. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally in college, I got roaring drunk with one of the kids who robs John Cusack. he did not look like that in real life. I loved that movie for the longest time. And I was at Ithaca College my first year out of high school, and I met a dude named Brett who was from Chicago, and his friend Ben came to visit, and we partied that night, drinking, other stuff, hanging out. And this kid got real banged up and was in the bathroom, vomiting. I kind of went in to take a leak and I saw him. And I was like, yo, you okay? And he was like, yeah, I'm okay. And then he kind of got himself back together and he came out and we were sitting there talking. And I said, I said something about the movie, but it kind of came up and he was like, yeah, I was in that movie. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you know, the two kids who robbed John Cusack and he's going through the records. And he's like, what are you stealing for someone else? He goes, I was one of those two kids. And I'm like, no way. He goes, yeah, I had pink hair. And I was like, get the fuck out of here.
That's a great story.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. And he was a nice guy, like super, super chill guy. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was very cool.
You know, and speaking of the idea of this community, and I know you guys have events. You know, sometimes you have signings. I know you've had some Power Rangers, like I see it on Facebook, like Power Rangers come in and sign. And then I was checking the website, you know, the other night, I saw you have like kind of like a D&D type thing going on. But like in general, mm-hmm. what kind of events do you typically have? And do you ever have bands play there?
Oh, yeah. So as I had mentioned before, when I was working in the city, it was either comic book store or music venue, but I decided I didn't want to work nights. So I went with comic book store. But then I don't know, I have to indulge the urge to have a music venue from time to time. So, luckily I could do that without having to deal with bartenders or admission fees or any of that kind of stuff. But I mean, yeah, we do Dungeons and Dragons. We used to do Magic the Gathering, we do two drawing classes for kids every week.
Oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah, we do a drawing class for ages 10 to 17 on Saturday mornings, followed by another shorter class for ages 5 through 9. Hmm. So we do two drawing classes a week. We're up to 5 D&D games a week. We do signings with artists and writers who create comic books. And then we do other stuff. Like we've got a couple comedy shows coming up.
Really?
We do live music. Awesome. We do live music from time to time. Actually, we just announced Elliot Fulham, who was Jonathan. I think his name was Jonathan Shaw in Terrifier 2 and the upcoming Terrifier 3. He'll be in our shop April 27th. And he will be performing acoustic because he's also a musician. And local favorite Joe Alaco will also be opening for him.
Nice.
You know Joe?
Joe is good friends with my buddy Matt McMickle, who was, they were in a band together, but Matt and I have been playing music since high school, and Joe is a great guy, a fantastic musician. And, you know, I know he's been, you know, ramping up his acoustic stuff lately. So, he's a great dude.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. No, Joe's a phenomenal dude. And so he'll be opening for Elliot. Last time, we've had Elliot in the store before and, Screenager opened for him. Mm. So that was pretty cool. But Elliot, I think he was saying that he's booking a tour soon, or he's already booked a tour. So this is going to be kind of like a chill, free admission, just walk in and kind of hang out, cool. Like warm-up type show for him, just to kind of break some of the rust off, because I think he's been doing a lot of promo for Terrifier 3. And so that'll be cool. I'm working on a couple other things, but we've had a bunch of different musical acts come through and play inside the shop, so that's been cool. And we also every year participate in Make Music Day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So there's like 80 something different live musical performances around town, and we're always one of them, so we're a big supporter of that.
Awesome. Now you have two kids, you two boys, do they like coming to the store? Do they like hanging out at the shop?
Oh my God, they absolutely love it. They are 7 and 4 though, so we are also working on them understanding that Daddy Shop is not their toy room. They can't just rip stuff open and play with it on the floor. Like, Daddy's gotta sell this stuff. But I mean, while they're young and they don't know any better, a lot of their birthday gifts come from the shop. And you know, they'll come in, Daddy, can I have a Pokemon pack? And I was, okay, well, why don't you put some boards and bags together, and then you can earn a Pokemon pack.
That's good.
When I was a kid, my dad's a structural engineer, so when I was a kid, I used to go to his office and like fill the paper towels and toilet paper and stuff like that in the bathrooms, and he would give me $3 an hour, and then I would take my $6 because it only took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I buy comic books and baseball cards and stuff like that. So I'm just trying to pass it down to the new generation, I guess. So.
And you know, obviously you mentioned, you know, that they're, your one son's into Pokemon at least, but based on some of the pictures I've seen on Facebook, they're into the comics and all the sci-fi kind of stuff. And is that something that you like kind of pushed on them, or it just kind of organically happened that they got into it, or just because I guess they're around it all the time?
It's just around all the time. So they'd ask questions, start off, oh, who's this, daddy? Who's that, daddy? What's this person? Oh, why is he, you know, he looks like a cat. He looks like a, you know, why is he wearing red and blue? And like, it would just turn to, you know, they just got into it and I'm into it. So, yeah. You know, when kids are real little, they kind of just gravitate to whatever you're into and then they run with it. So my kids are super into comics, but they're also like, my older son is really into Ben 10, which is something I never got into. They watch a lot of Hot Wheels racing. There's a Hot Wheels racing cartoon that they're super into. So, I mean, you know, they find a lot of new stuff that's kind of in this field that I'm vaguely familiar with or not really that familiar with. And then I learn more about it and sometimes even apply it to the shop and go, maybe I should start carrying some Hot Wheels racing books or cars or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's cool.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Ballew from the Presidents of the United States of America, or if you have little children, you know me as Casper Baby Pants, and you are listening to Dad Rocks.
I'm also curious, you know, because I have a 5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. How do you deal with especially some of the content that's in these movies and these shows and even, you know, comics? Like, what goes into your decision making about like whether or not it's okay for them to watch or to, you know, look at something that may not be really appropriate for their age?
I mean, it's a lot of just talking to my wife. I mean, I wake up in the morning and I drink a cup of coffee and I watch the news, and the news is like not 80%. There was a fire. This person got shoved down the steps of the subway. Three people got shot in the Bronx. Like, you know, it's war in Israel and Gaza. Like, you know, war in Ukraine and Russia. Like, it's, that's real life violence, you know? I'd really rather them watch Captain America punch Iron Man over a shield than, you know, have to be seven and see tanks blowing up buildings in real life. And then they, you know, at some point, yes, we're going to have conversations about that and they're going to see more of that stuff. But, I mean, I think the sexual content we keep away from them. Anything that's super bloody. But I mean, my kid, my 7-year-old, when he's in first grade now, when he was in kindergarten, he came home and he was like, "Dad, who's Pennywise?" And I went, "The band?" And he was like, "No, there's Pennywise the Clown." And I went, "How do you know about Pennywise the Clown?" And he go, "My friend Camilla told me, and Camilla's a girl in his class. So like, I don't know how she knows, but she definitely told him that there was a murderous clown named Pennywise." And so, you know, I'm not one for really shielding my kids, so to speak. So like, I told him who Pennywise was, and I kind of gave him the vague general overview of what the movie is about. And then he kind of runs with it. He knows that my wife is terrified of Pennywise. So he tries to, you know, make like weird faces and like, "Hey, mom, look, I'm Pennywise." You know, and she's like, "That's not funny." One day the little one, the 4-year-old, came home and goes, "Dad, I want to watch Terminator." I'm like, "How do you know what Terminator is?" But we took him to an arcade and there was a Terminator shooting game that he wanted to play that my wife had said no to, because, you know, we do also try to keep them away from using guns as opposed to seeing them used in like movies or shows or whatever. And he just, like, it was something that he wasn't allowed to do. He knew what the name was. And so, like every kid, he latches on to what he can't have. And that's, you know, what's Terminator? And so I keep telling them that they're still at an age where I care about whether or not they sleep at night. But at some point, I won't. And if they don't sleep because they're scared, then that won't bother me at all. But that's years from now. And actually, recently, I told my older son for his 18th birthday, I promise I will let him skip school for 2 days. We'll sit on the couch. We'll order food like pizza or wings or something like that. And we will watch every single movie I have been telling him he can't watch because he's not old enough, because at 18, he'll be old enough. And I said, and then if you don't sleep for a month, I don't give a shit. You're 18. You don't sleep for a month because you're worried that clowns and aliens and, you know, man-eating sharks are going to get you. When you're 18, I don't care about any of that. When you're 7, I very much care about that. So no to Jaws, no to Alien, no Predator. But when you're 18, who gives a shit, man? Watch all that stuff. Oh, you can't sleep? Drink some milk.
I'm sure he'll probably have watched most of those by the time he's 18.
You're an adult now.
But
go,
it's,
come on.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely watched a lot of that stuff before I was 18. But let him sneak in.
Oh,
like,
no, absolutely. I mean, I'm a public school
I
teacher.
Handing him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a teacher, and I taught K to 8. So, and you know, when Deadpool came out, there were like first and, you know, second graders talking about Deadpool. I'm like, what do you like? You shouldn't be watching this. And it was a big thing too. You know, it was a very popular thing, and even Stranger Things, like with the, it's just like, you know, it's, I guess, you know, it's a parental choice, but I was just curious because you live in that world and I didn't know like how you approached it. But I think you make a great point, and that's, you know, you would rather be the person who shows and explains it to them and then give them the guardrails and not be like, well, we're not going to talk about it, and kind of just be open about it and be like, look, you're not going to be allowed to watch this, but let me tell you what it is. And here are the reasons why you can't watch. I think that's a great, you know, strategy.
And then there's stuff like in Spider-Man No Way Home, like you would go, oh, okay, that's like kind of a fine movie. It's a Spider-Man movie. It's not a big deal. But like in No Way Home, when Aunt May dies, that's a super high emotional scene. And also, again, at the end, when he's saying goodbye to Zendaya and his Ned, I don't call them one real name, one fake name. I don't remember everybody's name, you know, but when he's saying that's a highly emotional scene. So like when I went to go see it, I came back and I told my wife, and she goes, oh, well, maybe we should wait until it's available at home. And then that way we can fast forward through that part. You know, I joke with my wife a lot because they've seen a lot of the Marvel movies, but we haven't shown them Infinity War or Endgame because those get real high emotional stakes, and I don't know if they're if I'm ready to let them watch Thanos choke Loki out with like his eyes bulging and stuff like that. But like I've had conversations with my wife where we go, maybe we put it on and then maybe daddy kind of sits on the remote during that part and it jumps 20 seconds, and maybe they just miss that part. And you know, maybe I sit down one day with a piece of paper and I write down the timestamps of all the few different bits like that. And I just, oh, sorry, daddy sat on the remote again. Sorry, guys. And we just do that. But at least we're there. We're not in a movie theater and we're home, so we can have a conversation if we need to pause it and go, well, why do you think that happened? Yeah. Like, oh, well, that's what it looks like when someone gets choked.
No, and my wife and I had similar conversations, you know, like even regarding Disney movies. Like, we took my son to see The Lion King when it came back out, and they were like, AMC, at least by us, was doing like every week was doing a Disney 100 movie or whatever. And we took him to see Lion King, and she was concerned about, you know, when Mufasa dies and everything like that. He seemed to be unfazed by it. He might be too young to really, you know, associate, you know, really understand it. But that, you know, even with Pixar films and all these like Disney movies, there's that heavy emotion that goes with it that may go over the kid's head, but at one point they may, you know, feel it, and it's something you have to be prepared for. You know, and so besides the fact your kids are into comics and all that stuff, are they also into music, and you know, what kind of music do you have playing in your house, what kind of music they like listening to?
That's been a little bit more of a struggle. So my older son is Milo. He's named after the singer from The Descendants. And my younger son is Daryl. He's named after the singer from Glassjaw. And so I went with musical names because I wasn't going to be the guy running around owning a comic book store with my children, Nightwing and Wolverine, or, you know, whatever. This is my son Batman, and this is my other son Superman. Although I did propose to my wife, I was like, we should name one Wonder and the other one Woman, and just, you know, almost like Ricky Bobby. Dr. Quinn and Medicine Woman. We don't have a full name like that, but again, music is my other passion, so we went with musical names. I mean, I listen to a lot of punk and hardcore and some reggae and some other stuff, and they kind of listen to whatever we listen to, but my wife also does have a much more diverse interest in music. So she listens to the same stuff I do, but she also will listen to pop and top 40 and stuff like that. And so I'm not really into any of that stuff. So, but they'll sing a Justin Bieber song if it comes on, because not that they like Justin Bieber, but they'll recognize the song from when my wife put it on, and she gets into it, so they get into it, and it's cool. They do know a bunch of curse words, and because of the music I listen to. I also like hip hop up until about the early 2000s, and then I kind of fell off, so I just listened to the old stuff over and over again. I haven't played a lot of hip hop for them, but they do like a particular Bad Religion song that has an F-bomb in the chorus, and they like to sing that, and we joke that I'm like Beetlejuice, and if they sing the chorus three times, then I appear. So they think that's pretty hilarious. They like a ghost story by Teenage Bottle Rocket. Milo sings that one a lot. They're into it for the most part. They don't really have favorites, and they don't have requests that they put in with me. But, every once in a while I'll go, hey, should Daddy put on some music? Yeah, put on, Ghost Story. And then it'll
And
just
your older son, he's in first grade, so it might be a little young, but has he shown any interest in playing music, either piano lessons or guitar or anything like that, or not really yet?
So I play bass, and I have a couple different guitars in the basement that they'll sometimes ask me to play, but they're at that age right now where they're not really looking to learn anything. They just want to touch stuff. So they'll be respectful and go, hey Daddy, can we play with your guitars? And I'll go, yeah, I'll come down and I'll help you, cause they're heavy. And I'll hand them the guitar, and they'll strum it a little bit and just kind of make noise. And then I'll, if I try to oh, well, here, let me show you how to play actual notes. No, I like to do it my way. Okay, so right now we're in that phase where they just want to do what they want to do. They don't want to be taught anything but I mean, my wife and I will put on videos of bands that we like playing live to listen to the live versions of songs, kind of thing. And, they'll be into it. They'll dance around the living room. They'll have a good time. But I don't think they're putting two and two together where they're figuring out, like I did as a kid, like you don't have to already be a professional musician to play music. You can just get an instrument and play music and get some friends together and start a band.
And do you hope they'll get to that point, or is it something that, if they decide they want to do it, you'll support it? Or is it something that you're going to try to maybe shepherd them into that? Yeah.
I would love for them to get into it. If they're not interested in it, then they're not interested in it. And I don't really want to push them into doing anything that they're not going to enjoy doing. I mean, we have right now, Milo is playing Little League. And so he likes playing, but the couple times that I've been like, hey, let's go to a batting cage and practice, hitting the ball, or let's grab our gloves and go outside and play catch. Like, he doesn't want to be bothered with it. So practicing really isn't a thing, but the activity itself is where the fun is. So I don't know. It's just, again, another child parent hump that we'll have to get over, and we keep trying to tell him, like, listen, your daddy didn't get good at playing bass because he just picked it up and was magically good at it. Like, I worked really hard at it every day for hours for a long time to play, and now I don't play nearly as much as I used to, and I wish I did, but you know, if you want to be good at baseball, you're gonna have to practice.
Yeah, I'm there too.
So
you know,
working on those lessons
with my
right
drums.
Now,
I remember my son would come down, and the older son would come down and try to play, and I'd be like, "You want me to show you anything?" He's like, "No." He's like, and he would do his own thing, and he just doesn't want me to help him out. And you know, he just started t-ball, and he's not, you know, I don't think he's gonna be a sporty kid. He's not really into watching sports with me, or you know, so. You know, it's just, again, giving them the activity, seeing how they do, and then, you know, supporting. You know, and I hope at some point he wants to take music lessons, but if he doesn't, he doesn't. And it's, you know, it's, I'm not going to force him to, like, take piano lessons and anything. But we'll see how it goes. Now, how did you get into music? Because, you know, you played, obviously you played bass. And did you start young, or did it kind of happen in your teens?
It was in my teens. So when I was 13, I got bar mitzvahed, and I begged my parents to get me a guitar. And I wanted a baby blue Stratocaster, just like Billy Joe from Green Day. And they took me to the guitar shop, Robbie's Music on 46.
No, that place is
building still there. I don't know if they're still open or not.
I
can't really tell.
That was like, I remember getting like stuff there when I started playing, and it was just like, it's a very strange place.
Yeah. We went there, and we went and looked at guitars, and I found a baby blue Stratocaster, and I fell in love immediately. And my parents bought me a Washburn acoustic, and I went, "What? That's not what I want. No, like, how is this a thing? Like, I wanted a guitar. You said okay, but you're buying me the guitar that you want, not the guitar that I want." Like, story of my life. So, if it wasn't by my parents' way to do it, it didn't get done. So then we're buying this guitar, and the guy ringing my dad up, who is just, like I mentioned, is a structural engineer, and. I think the entirety of his music knowledge is The Carpenters and George Carlin stand-up. That's probably about it.
Yeah.
My parents did not name me after Jeff Beck, the guitarist. That is a coincidence. 1,000% coincidence that they found out about it when I was in kindergarten, that there was a guitarist named Jeff Beck. My mom listened to like a lot of Israeli folk music and maybe like the Beatles, but that was probably it. They're not big music people. We didn't grow up with a ton of vinyl in the house or my parents going to concerts or anything. It was a very weird existence. But they bought this acoustic guitar. I was super upset about it. And then the guy goes, "Oh, does he know how to play?" And my dad goes, "Nope, he'll figure it out though," which was also my dad's way of going about things. "So he'll figure it out. No big deal." And they go, "Well, we do lessons here." And so my dad started talking to him and signed me up for lessons, even though I was like, "Wait, what?" And they sent him downstairs to buy book one and whatever book one was. And I started taking lessons there every Thursday, I think it was. After about a year and a half, I could play single notes for Happy Birthday, an old-timey song called Tom Dooley that my dad really liked. So that was... he was really excited about that, but I was like, "Who the fuck is Tom Dooley?" And then Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, after a year and a half of lessons, sucks. That's what I was doing. And I was miserable. I was like, "This, like, I don't even want to do this anymore." And so we stopped doing lessons there. My mom's friend's brother started coming over to teach me guitar, and he was teaching me chords and stuff, and I was just on the cusp of learning Green Day when he decided to rob a bunch of liquor stores and head to Florida.
Wow.
And so then my guitar lessons abruptly stopped. I don't even know why my mom told me that that's why my lessons had stopped. I think my mom was on like a, you know, like, let's just be honest with the kid. He's like 15, 16 at this point. Like, there's no point in lying to him. And so that kind of seemingly ended my musical experience. And then about a year later, or maybe about a year and a half later, I think I was 17, turning 18, and a bunch of my friends had started a band. I kind of lied and said that I knew how to sing, which is still not true to this day. I don't know how to sing. I'm a terrible singer. And came in, started singing for the band. It was turned it more into like a hardcore project than anything, because it was yelling a lot.
And then the dude who was supposed to play bass never showed up. And we had like three practices. He never came. And the guitarist had a bass that he had bought for the guy and just looked at me and he went, "Do you know how to play bass?" And I went, "No, I can play guitar a little, but it's all like single notes." And he went, "Dude, that's what bass is." So then he handed it to me and I flew like that. All of a sudden, like I was just good at it. And I was like, "Oh, wait, what?" And so, it was a Fender Squire P bass. and which I still have to this day.
Yeah.
I think every bassist has their shitty first bass. So, and that's been it ever since. And then I was in and out of a couple different bands, playing bass, maybe backup vocals.
And so this was around like 2000, 2001, bass. Something like
and,
that.
That was it. My first bass 1997 to 98 kind of thing. Probably 1998 because November of 98, gotcha. I turned 18. It was definitely
okay, so
before
you,
I was 18,
so,
but I got the,
yeah,
got
so you were, I bass, thought you were but, around,
yeah,
you're a few years older than me. So that kind of, I thought you were like because I'm 40. So I thought you were a little younger, maybe, Vigo, because I knew you knew the Bloomfield Ave Cafe, which was something that happened later. Okay. No, that's perfect. So when I was in high school, I went to West Essex. There was a pop punk band called Shorty that was kind of like, you know, do you remember that band at all? Or yeah.
Oh, okay.
So and then that was like when, I guess, when you were like a senior in 98, that's when like the pop punk scene really started to kind of burgeon, I feel like. And there was a place up in Wayne, right? Was it like Expression?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wayne Firehouse, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of VFW
Wayne
shows.
Wayne Firehouse was amazing. And I saw so many good bands there. I saw At the Drive-In at the Wayne Firehouse. I saw Ghetto Kids at the Wayne Firehouse. I saw Newfound Glory at the Wayne Firehouse. Midtown. There's a Facebook group called Late 90s, Early 2000s North Jersey Pop Punk that. Or New Jersey punk that talks about like shows at the Firehouse, shows at Bloomfield Ave, shows at Burchill Nightclub, shows at Starland before it was Starland. I think it was.
I don't know if it was
Starland, but there was a place called the Hunka Bunka Ballroom one time.
Oh, wow.
I saw Harvey Danger play with Less Than Jake, and I saw the guitarist from Harvey Danger take a beer bottle to the face I think the Rat. The radio station The Rat was putting it on, and I went with a friend of mine because Less Than Jake was playing, and I was like, oh my god, I still love Less Than Jake, but Harvey Danger played and they played like four songs and people weren't into it because they just wanted to hear that one popular Flagpole Sitta song, and people weren't into it, and then the singer was clearly getting frustrated and said something to the effect of, here's the song you all came to hear, you know, we're going to play it and, you know, just get it out of the way. And they played it and the room went nuts. Everybody's dancing, singing, having a good time. The whole vibe of the room like lifted. And, you know, I wasn't really into it, but it just felt like a better scene in that moment. And then the song ends and he goes, "All right, well, if you like that one, here's another one off the same record." They start playing a different song and everybody turned on him again. And we're just like, "Nah, go away. Like, you came, you played your song. Like, dude, now go. Like, put on the next band. This is stupid." And they were trying their best. And all of a sudden, I remember seeing the glint of a green bottle flying through the air. And it hit. I think they had... I can't remember which guitarist. I think it was Dad too, but it hit one of them like in the guitar and shattered. And the dude just takes his guitar off, slams it on the ground, and walks off. And their set ended early. And I remember there being a very long break in between bands.
Yeah,
I think they tried to get him back on stage. They were like, "Fuck you, Rat! No, we're not doing it." And then I think after that was Less Than Jake, and then Cherry Pop and Daddy's playing, but I left because I was like, "Oh, I'm not into this." It was a super weird bill. Yeah. I don't remember any of the other bands that played, but it definitely wasn't like, "Oh, there's a bunch of ska bands or a bunch of punk bands." It was like random genres of bands thrown together. And yeah, it was whatever.
What's going on, everyone? This is Al Evans from Soul Live, and you're listening to Dad Rocks. Enjoy.
So you were like kind of there at that forefront of that scene kind of building. Do you, I mean,
and
like, what do you remember? Because again, I was kind of, I was a little young, a little younger than you. So I knew about it, and I wasn't into punk. It wasn't my thing, but I knew a lot of people who were, and it was getting big. And, you know, there were a lot of great bands that came out of North Jersey, you know, in that scene. And so how do you remember it kind of like all happening, and like, what were the shows like? I mean, obviously, you know, you just talk about that with WRAT, but what were shows like at these, you know, VFW halls and everything?
It was awesome. It was awesome, man. And also, in hindsight, it's a little bit sad because it's not the same anymore. At least I don't think it's the same, but it's almost indescribable, man. Like, it was kids hanging out with very minimal parental supervision, but everybody was still generally respectful. I mean, sure, you every once in a while you'd have a fight break out or something, you know, a couple of kids would scrap, or, you know, maybe the police would get called or something like that. Mm-hmm. But like, generally speaking, for a bunch of punks, we were respectful of the venue, in terms of not burning the place down and not, you know, kicking holes in walls and damaging stuff, or, you know, everyone, you know, okay, yes, at the firehouse you had some people who would you know, try to break into where the fire trucks are and steal like fireman's equipment and stuff like that. I mean, we were still punks, like, we were still trying to do whatever the fuck we wanted, but, you know, it wasn't just like, I don't remember anybody getting stabbed or shot or anything like that. Like, it was fixed. And if you got into a fight with somebody, you guys punched each other a couple of times, your friends broke it up, the venue, the promoters for the show would break it up and go, what are you doing? You're fucking ruining the experience. Yeah, we're not going to be able to have shows here anymore. And that, those words were kind of the driving point that kept everybody chill. Was like, if we get out of control and we start doing the shit that we are probably doing in other places like the mall and, you know, around neighborhoods and stuff like that, like, they'll say, yo, you can't have shows here anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest threat that you could hit us with, because if we couldn't have shows there anymore, then what the fuck were we going to do with ourselves?
Right. Yeah.
And that was what was important. But you'd show up and there'd be older kids, younger kids, and everybody just wanted to see the bands play. Everybody was excited to see the Get Up Kids or NJ Joystick or Lane Meyer or Midtown, or, you know, all these bands that, like, and you knew who these people were. Like, it wasn't Green Day, who you think you know Billy Joe because you read a bunch of articles and interviews with them, but you don't fucking know Billy Joe. I don't know Billy Joe. Like, nobody I know knows Billy Joe. So, but you knew Gabe Saporta because he was the singer for Midtown and he was hanging out with you before his band went on. His band wasn't last on the bill. They weren't the headliner. They were probably the first or second band playing. His brother was the guy who put on the show, Ricky, and, you know, from Bomb Shelter Productions. And you knew his brother. Ricky used to throw me out of shows because I was broke and I always tried to sneak in and never had like the measly $4 that he would charge. We're friends now. Like, we actually, I ended up going to the same high school as him senior year. And we know a lot of the same people. Years later, reconciled, I guess. I don't think he was holding a grudge, but I always felt some kind of way about sneaking into the shows. But him and his friends would throw me out. They'd be like, yeah, you didn't pay, dude. And I'd be like, but I don't have money. And he'd be like, whose problem is that? But yeah, he was doing a thing, and I get it. And even if I didn't respect it at the time, I respect it now. And but that's who was in the bands. Like, or it was people our age from other parts of the country who piled into a van and used their own pocket money to drive all the way to North Jersey so that they could play, like Newfound Glory. You know, they're from Florida, but they drove, they were on tour And this was a stop for them because they knew it existed. Or you know, My Chemical Romance playing Bloomfield Ave Cafe. I think I saw them there twice when they were on Eyeball Records before they made it big. And they were hanging out with you before their band played, after their band played. They were at their merch table that was 4 feet away from the stage. Like, it was such a community vibe. And I think that's part of what I try to carry over into my shop is that kind of an experience. But it was just such a good time, man. I mean, it was just, you know, people talk about Woodstock being love and music and all this shit. And it's like, yeah, okay. But that's what we had too in the punk scene, in the North Jersey punk scene was, you know, you started to know the people who were there. You started to know the people who were showing up at shows. You knew the bands. You were buying their merch because you knew you were helping your friends out or that dude you just met the other day. It was a very cool vibe.
Now, did your band get to play a lot at these shows or, and like, what kind of shows were your bands playing?
The band that I was in that was, I would probably classify as the most successful being we were on a label. The label paid for us to go into a real recording studio and record a real EP professionally mixed and mastered and all that stuff, pressed, sold, stuff like that. We signed a contract, all that stuff. It was Refugee Records out of Garfield, New Jersey. The woman who ran the record label, who wasn't much older than us at the time, I still chat with her every once in a while. Her name's Mary Beth. She's in a band. She's still in a band called 6 to 8 Mathematics, which is really good. I don't think the label's a thing anymore. And then Nick, who was the lawyer for the label, he just recently moved to Florida and had a guy drop off the masters from REP at my shop because he was moving. And he was like, Nick told me to just drop these off because you're just the most accessible person from the band still around. Some guys moved across the country. Some guys are north, south, you know, and some guys are just not really on social media or hard to get in touch with. And, you know, I can get in touch with him, but I guess he had some trouble. So now I have the masters, which is kind of cool, I guess, if I knew what to fucking do with them, if it mattered. But so we kind of came in towards the end of the big climax of the North Jersey scene. For us, it was a lot of pay to play. You know,
Jersey shows, right? Wasn't that the big production who owned Blue phase, like Jersey shows or something like that?
Jersey shows, Heath Miller, is a name that pops in my head a lot. You know, I think he's moved on to bigger and better things, but, it was, oh, you want to play with this band? Okay. You know, you got to sell 20 tickets. Sell 25 tickets or whatever. You know, and then it was hitting your friends up. And then after a while you were like, your friends are going, dude, I just bought a ticket for me last week to come see your band. This week too? I got to sell these tickets, man. And that was the model. And it sucked. It was awful. Towards the end, we stopped caring. We just go, well, what are you going to do, promoter? You're going to put the show on with one less band? Like, our name's on the ticket. Like, you told people we were going to play, and now you're not going to put us on? Because what? Because we didn't sell your stupid fucking pieces of paper? Like, you shit, dude. What do you want us to tell you? So, and sometimes we would just get money together and go, all right, 20 tickets at $10 a piece. That's $200. There's 5 of us. So if everybody pitches in $20, that's $100. We'll just tell them we sold half and that's it. You know, and we just do that. Fuck you, man.
I was in a, it's one thing I kind of regret is I was in like a piano rock band and we kind of didn't fit any like mold. Like it was like kind of like almost like we modeled ourselves after Ben Folds Five, but we're not fully like
I was going to say Ben Folds, but I didn't want to
there was a huge, huge influence in especially in my teen years. But you know, we didn't have a place to play. Like, you know, there were all these punk shows. My dad would run the Caldwell Street Fair, so he'd have a bunch of local bands play, like get me to play, my bands to play. He started a battle of bands at West Essex because he's like, I don't know where any of these kids can play, because there was the punk scene. There was the circuit, right? The punk circuit. But then there was nowhere else, like at least in the Essex County area, that like you could have underage bands really play that weren't like didn't fit into that punk mold. And I wish I had pushed my band to like just get on to that scene, because I think we would have been accepted as like the weird kids, like, you know, possibly. I don't know.
But I don't know, man. I don't think you would have been the weird kids. I think they would have in hindsight, they probably would have taken you in with open arms. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because we eventually started playing like once we were in college, and Bloomfield Ave Cafe became like a thing. We played there a handful of times, but there really wasn't a lot of places to play for us. But you know, it's kind of interesting to think back of, you know, how vibrant that scene was, the punk scene, and you know, I was going to ask if the community that you were in kind of taught you anything, or you brought anything over to your store, and obviously you said that like the whole idea of what that community was like kind of influenced you and how you are approaching your business.
That vibe definitely is something that I think I've just tried to carry it around with me my whole life, you know. It was definitely so my sophomore year of high school, I was super into punk, listening to a lot of Green Day and Bad Brains and Descendants and Offspring and Nirvana and stuff like that. And then my junior year, I spent living in Israel on a kibbutz with 21 other kids. And I had, you know, I mean, before I left, I was also super into like Black Sabbath and Marilyn Manson and Nine Inch Nails. And I was dressing all in black and painting my face and into the Crow and all this stuff. And then I kind of like my experience in Israel kind of opened me up a little bit, and I didn't feel the need to dress in all black anymore and be goth and spooky and all that shit. But I was definitely way more into the punk stuff than I had ever been before. And so when I came back, that's when I found out that Bloomfield Ave Cafe and the Firehouse had started putting on shows, and they were punk shows, and they weren't Green Day, but they were bands who Green Day was one of their influences. But then this one was really into Bad Brains, and then another one was really into the Descendants or the Adolescents. And I'm like, oh my God, like, but they're not, but they kind of sound like them. And that's how I kind of fell into it. And it was awesome. And it was just such an awesome run that I was like, you know, when I opened the store, I was like, that's the vibe I want. I want people to come in, and I want people to be respectful because they're worried about something happening. I want them to be respectful because this is such a fucking cool place to hang out. And it's so much fun. And it's such a good, it's such a cool place to be and meet people and stuff like that, that they just want to be respectful because they don't want to lose the ability to have this jewel in their crown kind of thing.
Right.
And for the most part, it is like, we don't, knock on wood, people don't try to steal from us all the time. You know what I mean? They don't come in and try to pocket things and run out. People don't come in and act disrespectful and trash the place and stuff like that. And even when we have live music, people, you know, if they're dancing, they're dancing, but there's no like real moshing, not as a rule, but because people know that moshing, I think it's just kind of understood that the moshing can get out of hand sometimes. Someone gets a little too carried away. I mean, we've had stuff break here and there, and it's not the end of the world, and I don't get mad about it. It's actually pretty punk rock for the music to be so loud a Game of Thrones pint glass vibrates off the shelf and then falls and hits the ground, and then everything stops and they all look at me and I go, I got a broom and a dustpan, and then someone else will run over who I don't even know and go, I got it, and they'll snatch the broom and dustpan out of my hand and run over and sweep it up for me.
That's
and,
awesome.
And go, here you go. And it's like, it's that kind of shit that like at the Wayne Firehouse, that's what was going on. Like, so, and I tell, it was one of the first things I taught to my kids. I go, someone falls down, we pick them back up. Like,
when you're in the pit and someone falls down, we're not, this isn't fucking Ozfest. Like, yeah. We're not going to see Slayer or fucking, you know, Static X or whatever. You know, this is fucking, yeah. Like, we're punks, man. Like, when you're in the pit and you're dancing, you're swinging your fist and you get hit in the face, it's okay because you didn't get hit in the face out of maliciousness. You got hit in the face because someone was having a lot of fun and you got too close or they got too close, and it doesn't matter who got too close. You got hit. Are you okay? Yeah. Cool. Let's keep having fun. Someone falls down in the pit. They're on the ground. Whoa. Let's put our hands up. Let's keep everybody away. Let's give them some space to get back up on their feet. Yo, my man, are you okay? Yo, lady, are you good? Like, you can see okay. You're not concussed. Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. All right, then let's go back to having fun. Oh, you're hurt? Oh, you need medical attention? Cool. Let's find somebody who can call 911, or maybe there's an ambulance outside, yeah. Or get security over here so we can get you some medical attention. Like, we're looking out for each other, and that's what's important. And that's,
yeah,
that's the kind of stuff that I'm trying to foster, like that aspect of it, where, yeah, we could take Sharpies and draw on stuff all day that we shouldn't be drawing on, and tag stuff and put stickers on things that don't really normally have stickers on them, but you know, we're looking out for each other. We're picking each other back up when we fall down. We're keeping our eyes out for the smaller folks in the crowd, making sure that they're having a good time too, and they're not just getting beat up and tossed around. And
right,
yeah, it's community, man. It's all about community, and that's what I live for. Yeah. So
yeah. Now at the end of every episode, I like to ask guests what they've been listening to lately. And so who are three artists or what are three songs that you've been enjoying lately?
That's a good question. So I just hired a new guy who's been telling me that the new Alkaline Trio album is fire. I haven't listened to it yet, so I have to check that out. I think that might be on my agenda today. What was most recent?
It doesn't have to be new stuff either. It can be, you know, it can be, oh, look, what have you just been digging lately?
Oh, I don't listen to a lot of newer stuff. I don't listen to a lot of newer stuff. It's horrible. Let's see. I recently saw Vinny from the movie Life and I Am the Avalanche in a dude's apartment play acoustic. And he played Movie Life songs, he played Avalanche songs, he played some of his own songs, and that was fucking awesome. And definitely got me going, all right, now I have to listen to every Movie Life album and Avalanche album that I can get my hands on. I'm happy to see you can live without me. I've sorted out my life, my tragic life. Yourself on the back, yeah. Just shut your mouth and pay your rent and make a record they'll never forget. I care too much. My littlest, my younger son Daryl just had his fourth birthday party, so we're listening to Cat Bite. He likes Cat Bite a lot. If you like ska, like old school, No Doubt kind of thing, Cat Bite brings that vibe. I don't care, and I swear I'm gonna make it, gonna call your bluff. Oh, I don't care, and I swear ain't gonna make it, and you're not so tough. Oh, I don't care what you think of me. Say my hair's too short and my teeth look green. Gonna look the way that I wanna be. If you got more to say, I'm gonna make. We saw them open for the Bouncing Souls, my wife and I, last December. And of course, my store is a Bouncing Souls reference, so I'm going to say the Bouncing Souls because they're constantly in rotation. Let's go with that. Let's go with Vinny, Movie Life, Avalanche, Cat Bite, and Bouncing Souls.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming on to the show. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, same, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode, and special thanks again to Jeff Beck for coming on to the show. To get more information about Jeff's store, East Side Mags, you can go to eastsidemags.com, or you can follow the store on Instagram, X, and Threads, all at East Side Mags, all one word, or you can just search them up on Facebook and you can follow the store there. Of course, if you live in northern New Jersey, you should go check out Jeff's store in person. It really is a great place to go, especially if you like comic books. If you want to follow Jeff's personal Instagram account, you can do so by searching up J3FFB3CK. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would love for you to subscribe to the show and would really appreciate it if you left an honest review. Those reviews do help the algorithms get the show out to more ears and, I guess, eyeballs on when you're searching up podcasts. Or, you know, you could just tell a friend or two about the show, and that would help us also get the word out and spread the word about this podcast. If you'd like to follow the show on social media, you can follow us on Instagram, Threads, and X at Dad Rocks Pod. We're also on Facebook. Just search up Dad Rocks Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or show ideas, or just want to say hello, feel free to shoot me an email at dadrockspod@gmail.com. If you want to check out the music you've heard on this episode in full, there's a Spotify playlist which should be linked in the podcast description. Once again, thanks for listening today, and remember, dads, you rock.